Hi, I'm Roxy. I'm a real alcoholic. Wow, yeah. Hello. Anyway, I want to welcome all the newcomers here. You know, I've been a newcomer before, and you're in the right spot. You know, I'm a grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's the largest organization in the world that nobody wanted to belong to. You know, and I am grateful that I belong to it because it has changed my entire life. And everything I know today is because of Alcoholics Anonymous and doing what I do here and doing what everyone does. Guy, it's going to take me a second to settle down a bit. Maureen, congratulations, 6 years. I want to thank everybody who, all my friends, women friends especially, that came out to see me. I don't know if they're here to give me a bad time or what, and carry me and pick me up as I go through this. You know, last week I came and listened to the speaker, and he said something to the effect that Larry had ruined his month. And I was, I think, the only one in the room that said, yes, he has ruined my month. And you think about this, and you think about this, and you think about it. And you plan it out, and about an hour and a half ago, I forgot it all. Yeah. So, you know, Bill knows. So it's like, okay, God, please give me an abundance of whatever it is I need to do your will and not mine tonight, you know. And that's what's going to get me through one more day, one more time, one more situation. And that's pretty simple, you know, and it wasn't that way at first. You know, I too started out at about 12 years. I'm an East County product. I was raised up in Ramona. You know, and East County was the meth capital of the world, of course. But, you know, at about 12 years old, I started my drinking. And, you know, I come from a long family of drinkers. And fortunately, I am the first person in recovery in my family. But, you know, a story that happened in 1938 was when my grandfather and his brother were running around in their town, and they were drinking all day and having fun, and they'd been thrown out of one cafe, and they made it down to my grandfather's pool hall where they were playing pool in, poker in the back room, and it was illegal, so they had to pay the sheriff off. So here in come the sheriff after they'd been drinking all this time and causing problems, and he started to harass the two of them, my uncle and my grandfather, and he pulled out his gun and shot my uncle. You know, I'm fortunate that it wasn't my grandfather. But that's kind of where my family comes from when it comes to alcohol. And it started way back when. And somewhere along the line, I don't think I really had a choice. You know, I never wanted to be an alcoholic like my mother. And it's interesting because about an hour and a half ago, my son texted me and said, "Where are you speaking? Granny and I are coming." And I went, "Oh, my God, no." So I had to lie. You know? You know how we love doing that, working the honest program that we work. So I just said, "Tell her my phone is off and you don't have the address," which he doesn't, so it's not quite, you know. And I turned the phone off. And he said, "Okay, Mom, love you, bye." And you know what? Today it is not my mother's fault. And I would say that to her, but I'm not sure she would hear that. You know, it is not anybody's fault but my own. And fortunately, I learned that through working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. At 12 years old, I started the drinking, and, you know, by the time you're that young, you have to drink a little bit of everything. You know, we fill the water in the bottle up at the grandparents' house and drink some more, and so by the time I was 15 and still drinking, I remember vividly the night that I crawling up the stairs to my bedroom as I'm throwing up all down the stairs, too. I mean, I was a glamorous drinker. It was good. You know, and I still continued. Like any good alcoholic, from the very beginning, I continued to do it again and again and again. I remember the first night that I smoked some marijuana. I sat in a barn up at Ramona at Perry's family's house, and I just watched the smoke rings go. Wow, I had found heaven, you know. And that stuck with me for the rest of my life, you know. Even after I quit smoking at 27, I used to tell people, say, do you smoke? Not cigarettes. Like it was some, you know, big thing to be smoking pot instead of cigarettes. Oh, my goodness. It's crazy. You know, I was raised up in Ramona, and I don't know why to this day God chose me to be one of the people that got clean and sober, or clean and sober up there, because there's many of my friends that I went to kindergarten with that are still up there dying, if they haven't already died. And I don't ever question that. I just know that, you know, I got a great opportunity to be in this room and to change my life. And I just kind of go with that. I bought a house a few years ago, and I moved across the street from this guy. And it's up in Alpine. There's, you know, 3 acres. It's nice, and it's quiet, and it's on this hill, and there's not a lot of people up there. And the guy came over after about a month and said, hey, how do you like it up here? I says, I love it. This is great. And he goes, oh, people don't really like the country this much. You know, it's pretty quiet and, you know, it's dark and scary. And I said, oh, no, I was raised in Ramona. And he says, so was I. And I said, really? He told me his name. His brother owns the house. Him and his brother and I went to kindergarten and all through school all of our lives. So I feel like I've gone full circle, you know. It's like, wow, what an amazing thing. And that house that I have, you know, it's, I said, if I don't own a house by the time I'm 50, I'll never own a house. And I prayed to God, and I would look at houses, and the next thing I know, 3 months before I turned 50, I closed on this house up there, you know, and it's far greater than I could have ever imagined. My entire life is far greater than I could have ever imagined. You know, as I got into high school and stuff, I never really felt like I fit in. I was always seeking some outside stuff to make me feel good inside, you know. Caused a lot of problems. You know, I was a cheerleader up in Ramona and got kicked out for conduct. Can't believe that, you know. But anyway, there was a group of us, quite a few of us, that what is there to do up there? I mean, the theater was open, but so what? We did a lot of drinking up in Beer Can Alley and Rubber Hill and all these different places we'd go to, you know. And the interesting part was is that I was allowed to drink at home, too. I don't know how many of you were, but, you know, my mom had the philosophy that if you're going to drink, you might as well do it at home with us. And the insanity that happened at my house on a Friday or Saturday night, when I was at home and they'd say, oh, we'll buy you guys a case of beer. And they would drink with us. And by the end of the night, they were chasing us around with guns and we were running crazy. And it's like, oh, my God. And this is a middle-class American family, okay? From the outside, you would not be able to tell what was going on in the inside. I don't know if any of you relate to that, but that's my story. And thank goodness Mom isn't here to hear it, okay? I got pregnant at 18 and got married, you know. And I'd spent years and years with my mom, who had had 5 husbands, and 2 of them died. One of them was my dad. And so I watched the next 3 and her fight the whole time. And so I didn't know what it was like to be in a relationship. So when I got married at a very young age and had a really great kid, Michelle, I was in a domestic violence relationship. And it was insane. Spent 7 years in that relationship. And it wasn't either one of our faults. Drinking and drugging, it was exactly what we did all the time. And at night, then, we tried to kill each other. And, wow, that was fun. That was fun. All the time we had this little girl, you know. So anyway, as that separated and I got divorced, I moved down here. I'd been living down in the Lakeside, El Cajon area. And, you know, I had lots of friends that needed chemicals to be put in their bodies. So since I wasn't getting child support, I decided to do a little side business of my own, okay? And I justified it. You know, you can justify those things. Oh, well, I'm not getting child support, and I might as well sell some drugs. And that's how I made money, you know? And it's interesting because other things looked okay. I was coaching softball for my daughter. I was in charge of the cheerleaders. I had a 10-year career at SDSU. I belonged to the zoo, SDSU. I was a landscape irrigation specialist out there for a long time. Must be getting ready to lie, I guess. Let me voice that lie down, okay? And so I had my business also at SDSU with all the people that I worked with, you know. And one day, after going with my friend Jim to the Charger game, Charger Raider game on a Monday night football, Tuesday morning I pulled into work about 6 in the morning, and they arrested me in the back of my car and took me to jail. Took me down to the police station, you know, and I didn't know, God, are they at my house? Please don't be at my house, you know. And my daughter, that little girl, was now 16, and she was a cheerleader at Granite Hills High School, and she, too, was pretty much in her disease, and it was not a good thing. So I remember coming home that day, you know, I felt really, I knew I wanted to get sober. I knew I wanted to get sober. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to do it, but I wanted to. I had a couple of numbers. I had Detox's number at my phone book. I had AA Central's number. I had people's number that I knew went to meetings, and I couldn't pick up the phone and do it. So now I'm going to backtrack. Because let me tell you, I quit a long time ago. I got a drunk driving, and they sent me to AA, and I went to the Lana Club in El Cajon, and I'd go there every day, and I'd have my whiskey and 7-Up sitting out in the car, and I would run in, and I'd sit down, and I'd be a part of the meeting, and I never, ever saw any of the slogans on the wall. I never heard about sponsorship. I never heard about Steph. I just listened to all their stories and ran back in the car and drinking my whiskey on the way home. And because I didn't want to be an alcoholic like my mother. So somewhere along the line, I heard something in that meeting, and I decided that I was going to quit. So for 8 years, I quit drinking. I was still on the marijuana maintenance and the crystal weight loss program, though. Still running my business. You know, and doing the deal. And, you know, it talks about it in the book, how we go to any lengths to do stuff, okay? And so about 8 years into it, you know, I'm entertaining the thought of drinking, and it's getting close, and I'm thinking about it. And I went with this group of students from San Diego State down to Mazatlan. We went all the way down there, and we went to this bistro that was on the other end of town, and we sat down, and they started drinking strawberry daiquiris. And I'm thinking, man, that looks so good. That looks so good. But I thought, nah, because I don't drink. So I decided, well, we all went back to the hotel, and the next morning I got up by myself and went over to the bistro and ordered the cocktails. A whole pitcher. I wanted a whole pitcher of strawberry daiquiris for myself. And nobody could find me. And I had a friend that was with me. And he came in there and he saw me drink. And he was floored because he'd never seen me drink. And he just couldn't believe it. And so then we went back to San Diego and El Cajon. And for almost another year, I didn't drink. But when it was time for me to drink, I went back down to Mazatlan. And I found that bistro again. And I sat in there and drank another pitcher. And from then on, I came home and started drinking. And it was about 8 months before I finally ended up in jail. And that's the point that saved my life. And the sad part is I had a year of going to court. That every month I'd have to go to court. And every month, just before going to court, you know how we are, good alcoholics. You got to get one on, you know, let's get it going. And I would literally almost kill myself for a weekend. And then go to court on Monday, and my lawyer would say, "We're going to continue this case." And I'd say, "No, no, get it over with." People would come to my house, all my girlfriends. I'd say, "I'm going to jail." And they would say, "No way, we can't. We're scared for you." And I'd say, "You know what? If I go to jail, I'm going to get clean and sober, and I'm going to learn to live on air. Breathe in and out and live on air. I'm not going to have to keep putting something in my body to make me feel good." And, you know, they didn't understand that. They were all scared, and I was pretty excited about it. So on November 28, 1988, the judge sentenced me to Las Colinas. So I say, I got clean and sober at the resort in Santee. So true. My judge said, bottom of my papers, no early release, no work furlough, no treatment, no nothing. You are there the entire time. So the minute I got into that jail and they closed the door on me, I had my spiritual awakening. The door closed, and I'm in there alone, and that sound is so dead. And I sat down, and I felt so hopeless, so desperate. I was so angry at myself. I didn't know what else to do. I had so much guilt and shame in my body. I didn't know who to turn to, and I didn't know who to reach out to. And I started to cry, and then I heard, "Roxy, what are you doing here? You are worth more than this." And I don't know where that came from. Today I do. But I said to myself, I am worth more than this. And everything that I have been doing in my life got me right here. And I said, "Please, God, help me." And just like Doug said, that's all it took. "Please, God, help me." And know it from inside your heart that I was willing to go to any length. So I spent this next 6 months in jail. I was a trustee, and right away, because I could work. Working was never my problem. Never my problem. I could hold a job. I had a house. I paid the rent, and I did all the stuff. That was never my problem. You know, alcohol was my problem. Absolutely. And, you know, I had that little girl that's 17 now, and she was not living at home anymore. I'd kind of thrown her out, or she left on her own and never came back, and I was devastated. And she was out there going crazy. I also had a 3-year-old son by this time, so he went and stayed with my mom while I spent the time in jail. And I remember, you know, he had toothaches and he had some tooth problems. And I remember sitting in jail, and I called home and I said, "Mom, can I talk to Brian?" She said, "You ought to be in jail for the way this kid's teeth are." And I was like, "Oh my God, Mom, I am in jail." I mean, Mom and I have this not so great relationship, but you know what? I love her. Love her. Thank God, you know. I worked it pretty good in jail, and I had an attorney that ended up taking me back to court, and I got out 3 days early, so I felt like I'd really done something. You know, I got out 3 days early. But when I was in there, there's a library, and in the library is where all the people get to have AA meetings, you know, and other 12-step meetings. And I wanted to be a trustee of the library. So I put in an application. I wrote 3 pages to the deputies as to why I deserved to be the librarian trustee, okay? And they just couldn't believe I did it. So they gave that to me. So I got to be with all the meetings. I had tons of people coming in. I got meetings. Even loved the Spanish meetings. I didn't know what they were saying, but the feeling was so good, and they brought in the best cookies. The best cookies, you know? And when you're in jail, that's a really cool thing. But anyway, in jail is where I met Lee and Sue, and they came in and did H&I meetings. And, you know, H&I is so important, and I always, you know, support the Green Can, please. They need help inside there. They need books. But anyway, Sue and Lee would come in and at different programs, okay, and other women came in, too, that I've known for years and years now, and they would carry the message, and I wanted what they had, and I didn't know how to get it. And, you know, they told me, here's a schedule. We can't give you our phone number, but here's a schedule, and I'll highlight some meetings, and you come when you get out, you come to these meetings. And I thought, okay, well, I can do that. I'm willing to do that. You know, and so when I went to get out of jail, all I knew how to go to was my other friends. And so they came and picked me up, and we picked my son up, and then we went over to one of their houses, and they all went in the bathroom and got loaded, and I sat out on the couch going, oh, my God, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? I don't want to do this. Don't want to do this. But I didn't know where else to go. So 4 days I stayed with my girlfriend. And I was used to getting up early in the morning, so I'd get up early in the morning and walk out, and there was the marijuana cloud that just kind of sat there in the room because they all had just gone to bed. And it was like, I can't keep doing this. So I remembered my schedule, and I opened it up, and I said, wait a minute, Aunt Emma's on a Saturday morning. She said she would be there. Sue's going to be there. So I went to the Aunt Emma's meeting out in El Cajon, and that was a long time ago, and walked in, and Sue was not there. I was devastated. I didn't know what to do. And so they said their names around the room, and I was scared, and I didn't know what to say. So I said, well, I'm Roxy, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm fresh out of jail, and I'm looking for Sue because I need a sponsor. And somebody said, well, we know Sue. So they called her. And Sue sponsored me for years and years after that. You know, she taught me how to do everything. I remember, you know, I ended up having to go home to my mom where my daughter was living, and my daughter was still, you know, running amok around town. And I came home. I used to go, when I, early recovery, 3 to 5 meetings a day. Guaranteed you might stay sober, okay? 3 to 5 meetings. The 10 o'clock, the 12 noon, the 6 o'clock, the 8 o'clock, and the 10 o'clock. And the day's over with, you can go home and go to bed, okay? It works pretty good. Thank you, God, for keeping me sober. Thank you, God, for keeping me sober. And I did that for a long, long time. I was fortunate enough to have a pickup, so my service work was, let's get in the truck and let's keep meeting hopping all over town. You know, when I got tired of the ones in East County, I said, this is so boring. Somebody says, have you gone down to Central? Have you gone to the beach? Well, no. So I started going down there, you know. And I wasn't one of those people that was stuck with one program or another. You know, if you were into the 12 steps, staying sober, God, I was going to go wherever that was. I was okay with that. And, you know, I remember asking Sue one day, Sue, how come they don't say willingness as being the first thing that's here? You know, they have that H-O-W. I don't understand that. I think willingness first, then open-mindedness, and then honesty. Because honesty, you know, it takes a while. Maybe I'm still working on it today, you know? And she goes, Roxy, that's not the how of the program. H-O-W, how? And I said, oh, hey, that's pretty cool. So I've learned, you know, I've learned through some of the slogans that I never saw the first time I came through here. I know what they mean now. That first things first, that just for today, you know, those are slogans that I live by. You know, I do the just what I said, got in and got out. That's kind of my own little slogan. Geez, there's a lot to it. Okay. I don't know if anyone else was pretty self-centered when they got here. But I was real. Oh, you was? I was going to say, that's this big. Okay. You know, I was self-centered, and I didn't even know it. And I was a victim, and I didn't even know it. But, you know, the only thing I really had to give up other than alcohol was the self-centeredness. You know, it's kind of a requirement that I had to do. And thank God I did that today, because I am just a much, you know, it's just life is totally different. Anyway, let's talk about everything I know about God I learned here. You know, there was a time when I was in junior high and high school that we were to drink slow gin and 7-Up with my girlfriends, and we would go over and go to this church where all the boys from the boys' home would be at, you know. And so that was the only other experience I really had with any religion. My family just didn't do it, and I don't think I was doing it then. But when I got here, you know, I was so self-centered and very controlling. Everything was my way. When you came to my house, you drank the things I drank. You used the way I used. You did da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Everything was the way I did it, and because that was the best way. So when I got here and they said, okay, you have to have blind faith and believe in God, you know, that was so hard for me. But I'm one of those visual people. So I saw that it was working in Sue and Lee's life, and they would tell me, and other people in meetings would tell me how it worked for them, and I'm thinking, okay. Fortunately, they also said that I could have a God of my understanding. And that was like, okay, I don't have to have this God that I don't know anything about and I don't understand. I can make up my own. And so what I started to do is, okay, let's use blind faith. And I had this vision of me riding in a limousine, okay? But I'm driving because I'm in control. And they said, okay, you need to have God do this, Roxy. And I said, oh, okay, well, here, God, I'll tell you where to go. You can drive. Then my next little vision is, as he say, just let me handle it. I said, okay, I'll get in the back seat, but I'm going to lean forward and tell you how to go, okay? And the more I stuck around and the more I decided to let God and allow God in my life, the further back I got in that limousine, and it got to where all I did was when the car stopped, I get out and I do footwork. If it was time to get a job, I get out and I do footwork. And I do get back in, sit down, and wherever the car's going that day, and it stops, I get out and I do the next designated thing in front of me, one foot in front of the other, whether it was a meeting over here or a meeting over there or helping somebody at this house or doing something there, that's what I did. And that car got longer and longer and longer. You know, today, my faith in the higher power and my God is just something that is so incredible to me that I don't even know how to explain it. If I could tell you how to live in the moment, I would love to do that. But once that feeling gets to you and you have that, you never want to let it go. It is a better high than I've ever experienced before. And there's many a times that I do something and I start worrying and I have to catch myself. And that's why I do that. God in, Roxy out. Because you know what? Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And it's going to be okay. Because my God's taking care of me today. And I am so fortunate to have that. Looking at where I'm going now. I'm not sure where I want to go now. You know, when I first got here and Michelle was out there drinking and using too, that's my daughter, and I wanted to help her so bad, you know. Of course, when I got to recovery, I wanted to help everybody. I wanted everybody, all my friends that used to get high with me, come on over, we're doing recovery. Well, there's not a whole lot of them here, okay? Just to let you know that. You know, there's just not a whole lot of them here. But, you know, I wanted to help my daughter, so I'd go to lots of young people's meetings. And I sponsored lots of young people at that time, you know. And all the hope was is that I would find somebody who would carry the message to her. I figured if I carried it in that direction, she, you know, somebody would come along and she would hear it too, you know. And that never happened for the longest time. She went to jail right after becoming 18, and I had just gotten out of jail, and the deputies there that knew me saw her in the holding tank, and they remembered her having come and visited me, and they knew that I was doing things to change my life. So she was in her little short shorts and her little bikini top, and she's drunk, you know, and they decided to give her a little scared straight tour of Las Colinas. So they took her down to the B housing and said, "You need to do what your mother's doing. She's changing her life. Isn't that da 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 da?" Well, she didn't hear any of that then, okay? And she had another drunk driving, and my mom calls me and says, "We shouldn't tell your grandparents that she got a second drunk driving. This would just kill them." And I'm thinking, wait, my grandparents are in their 80s and 90s. And hearing that my daughter got a second drunk driving is going to kill them? That's just part of our family secrets that we do, okay? And so anyway, about 9 years ago, I was at home and my daughter calls and says, "I got it, Mom. I got the gift." And I'm like, "Okay, what are you talking about? What gift?" "The gift. You've had it for a long time, Mom. You've got the gift. You've had it for a long time." And I'm like, "I don't know what the gift is you're talking about." She says, "I've been to 3 meetings in 3 days. I'm clean and sober and already got me a sponsor, Mom." Yeah, yeah, you know, and I'm saying, "Well, I forgot to pray about that, you know. But it finally, you heard me. Thank you." And, yeah, I'm so fortunate because she does. She'll be coming up on 9 years in May. And it is a true gift, you know. And I go up to where she's at in Santa Monica and have gone to a lot of meetings, went to her baby shower this year, and a lot of the women from the program are there. And it just makes you feel good to know that, you know, she too has God in her life, and she has blind faith and all those things and the gifts and the promises. You know, we don't talk a lot about the promises. The promises do come true if you stick around here, you know. When I worry about money, I think, wait a minute, financial insecurity will leave you. And it does. And I think, okay, money comes in, money goes out. There it goes. Oh, well, I'm still here. It's cool. You know, I will intuitively know, you know, there's all types of stuff that if you read the book, work the steps, it happens for you. It's not a joke. And it's hard for even somebody, for me, an alcoholic like me, to have believed that when I got here was a true miracle, that somebody opened my ears up and let me hear those things. And that I was allowed to see other individuals that told me they too had changed their lives. They could tell me that hopeless, desperate, angry feeling that they had inside. And I had that when I got here. I had that. And I was mad at me. You know, when it was time for me to do my inventory in the 4-step and stuff, you know, I had a really hard time writing anything down. And I went over to Sue's house and I said, "Sue, I'm having a hard time doing this." And she says, "Well, why?" And I says, "Because really, I'm mad at me. I'm the one that I hurt." And she says, "Well, put yourself on the list." Like, "Oh, really?" So I put myself on the list, you know, and I realized that all the decisions that I had made in my life, I had made hurt me. Nobody else did that to me. You know, I had a man I was engaged to years ago, and I was so selfish. I was so jealous of his sister. I was so jealous of his mother and all of his friends. And you know, it was really hard for me to allow him to love me and to trust him and all that stuff. And I didn't know how to be loved. I didn't love myself. You know, and I didn't know how to trust anybody, and I'd never had a man in my life that I could trust. You know, my dad had left me when I was really young. So, of course, it wasn't good because I was drinking, and I tend to screw everything up when I'm drinking, which is kind of normal. And so when I did all my inventories and as I worked my steps in my life, I realized there was one regret in my life, and that's that I never married this man. And by the time I realized that, you know, he was way gone and in another state. You know, as I kept in touch with some people, they said, well, now he's married and now he has kids. And I just kept saying, okay, well, I'm happy in my little life and I'm glad that he's there. And I never, you know, I'm just wished that's the only thing I ever regretted. So about 3 years ago, I got a phone call. And, you know, I never got to make amends to this guy either. So the phone rings, and he says, hello. And I said, oh, my God, Jim, you have no idea. I want to tell you how selfish and self-centered I am, and I'm so sorry that I did this, and blah, 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 and I love you so much, and you're such a wonderful man, and I just wished I'd have married you. Hello? Hello, Jim, are you still there? And he goes, yeah. I didn't scare you, did I? No. Says, yeah, right. And I'm just, my heart's going like this. And I said, I can't believe that I've said this to this guy. He's never going to call me again, you know. And I hung up, and I live up on a hill in Alpine. And so all of us kind of walk and do things. And so I was telling all the women about this. And I said, oh, God, I just got, why, are you going to see him again, Roxy? No, I don't think so. You know, he's just going through a divorce, da 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 da. And so, you know, some time went on, and talked to him on the phone a couple other times, and some more time went on, and a year and a half went on, and, you know, about a year and a half ago, he called and says, you know, I kept saying, come out, I have a big Thanksgiving family dinner, come out, everybody would love to see you. So October came, and he says, well, I'm thinking about coming out, and I said, oh, God, please, this will be great. And then he called again and says, you know what, there's no jobs here in Vegas, and why don't I go ahead and come out, because I think there's some jobs in San Diego. And I said, okay. And so he came out, and that was in October 20th, and Christmas Day he asked me to marry him. And so, yeah, how cool is that? Thank you, God. You know, everything I ever dreamed of, I got here, you know. That is a gift from Alcoholics Anonymous. I put it out there, and I said, you know, it was my biggest regret, and I get to maybe change the way that is. And, you know, I spent all my recovery not in a relationship, so I'm, like, blown away that now all of a sudden I'm in this relationship and it's okay. And you don't know how many friends I have that's out there in the Internet and going out finding people and doing all this stuff, and they're trying to get, you know, in a relationship. And they said, what, you stayed at home and now you're engaged? What is that about? And my answer to that is, 5 years ago, as I was sitting inside the Descanso jail with a bunch of 18 to 25-year-old high-risk criminals that I was doing group with, I made a list of what I wanted in a man. And I wrote down everything that I wanted. And then I got home, and I remembered two other things, so I wrote them down. And that's how I got Jim back in my life, is because he was on that, you know, the list was what he was. And we found that list this past year. And he laughed. He says, the only thing I don't want to be is teachable. And I said, I don't think I'm teachable. I said, yeah, I didn't either. But I'm teachable today, okay? I'm teachable. So anyway, you know, I'm. It's just one of those amazing things. And my daughter just, you know, she loved him back when she was this little tiny girl. So she's like so totally grateful. And then my son, who has never really seen me drink or use, never knew Jim. And so the second time he meets Jim, he says, hi, I'm going to marry your mom. He's like, what? Wait a minute, wait a minute. No, you're not going to marry your mom, you know. And so one day they talked, and Brian says, no, you know, I think you should wait 3 years. And Jim says, your mom will be 60. Would you marry a 60-year-old? So now that, you know, he's gotten to know Jim, he's way okay with it, which is kind of good. So I'm grateful for that. You know, I don't know how much longer I got. Do we close? Where are we at? Anyone going to say anything? I got 5 minutes. Okay. You know, if you're here and you think you're here by accident, that's okay. Stick around, you know. Give us 30, 60, 90 days of your time and follow some of us around and give yourself a break, because you can always go back out there and do what you was doing. But I don't think people get here by an accident, you know. I know that, again, many of my friends that I was raised with all my life are up in Ramona, still crazy and out of control, or they're in a grave and dead. So for me, this is the best thing that I ever did in my entire life. And it's the best thing that I've ever did for myself first and everybody around me and my kids. You know, hopefully my grandbaby, who I just had a grandbaby, my daughter did, you know, she's 39. She said, Mom, I'll never have kids, never have kids. She got sober and said, maybe I want to have kids and get married someday. And I'm like, no way, no way. And she got pregnant this year after getting married, and all the time she's pregnant, I'm thinking, is she really wanting to do this? And the minute I saw her in the hospital with this little girl, I couldn't believe it. She is a changed, totally changed woman because of this baby, and it's just incredible to see. And her life, too, is a testimony of having changed everything in her life. And, you know, I get today to work with tons of people in recovery. I run one of the treatment centers in town, you know, and I have watched many people die from this disease. And I've watched many people recover from this disease. And that is the true miracle that happens in here. It's a true miracle. People that are so hopeless and desperate coming back. So, I want to read one little passage. And everything you want to know is in this book. Working with others is in this book. The family, your wives. And I want to read There Is a Solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others. I saw it in Lee and Sue. And we had come to believe in the hopelessness and fertility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence for which we had not ever dreamed. And I have been rocketed into the fourth dimension. Thank you very much.